It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were guides, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies be line with a death wish. Be right, didn't have no name on the guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
So due to a power surge, we're having a phone issue. Well, we were. We figured it out. So if you try to call in, we figured out a way to get you on. So we're taking your calls, 713-780-3776. Phones are open for you to get in if you so choose. All right, so I mentioned that the Texans made some contract decisions on a couple of their star players, but it's the stuff you would expect. CJ Stroud gets his fifth-year option. So does Will Anderson. So your first-round picks from a couple years ago now, they have their fifth-year options exercised. So whether they come to a contract agreement with CJ or Will Anderson, the more obvious and likely choice, those guys will at least be under contract for next year and the year after. They had to make that decision by, I believe, May 8th. They've done it a month in advance. So CJ Stroud and Will Anderson will be here. And for the most part, it's really just about an upgrade in what they're getting paid, if they even are getting paid on that fifth-year option. They could very well sign extensions beforehand and wipe that out of the way, or could be an extension on top of the fifth year. So they're going to be here for at least the next couple of years, unless there's a complete disaster at the quarterback position where they have to deal with paying CJ. I don't even know what the fifth-year option at quarterback is now, but it's upwards of 20-something million,
yeah,
whatever
like,
it is.
Yeah. It's in the low 20s, I think.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, cap's always going up. It's like way higher.
So it guarantees him 25.9, so nearly 26 million.
That is higher than I thought.
Yes. The Panthers did it for Bryce Young because he was the first-round pick, or excuse me, the first overall. He gets more. So it has to do with where you're drafted.
Oh, okay. So it works like the draft.
So as opposed to franchise tagging, it's more about where you're drafted in your draft slot. So that's what CJ's going to get in his fifth year if he isn't signing an extension beforehand. So there it is. Decisions that were obvious to be made, and they made them. Texans get that out of the way a month in advance. They also did make a trade. They traded with the Patriots, who are in the news for different reasons, but they made a trade for a rotational linebacker, if you want to call it that. Lance talked about him this morning. Mapu is now a Texan. He's been a Patriot, drafted in the third round, hasn't done very much, and that's why the compensation wasn't great. Marte Mapu is now a Texan. He's one of those guys who will, if he's going to make a name for himself here, likely on special teams, that's where he's going to get most of his snaps. He's played quite a bit for the Patriots in his first couple seasons, just hasn't done very much. He's got a half a sack over the first couple seasons of his career. A couple picks as well. Is he any better than what they have? Unlikely, but it is just another Patriot connection. And it was swapping into the draft picks. Sixth and seventh round picks get swapped. So Mapu is a Texan. If they have a choice, but if it falls this way in the draft, you could address linebacker there. I mean, off-ball linebackers at this point is now a position that doesn't get talked about very much. The Texans have been able to get by. They did sign Azeez Ashier, but, I mean, Toto became a viable player. I mean, with the disappearance of Christian Harris, Toto stepped in. And it feels like for them, and it's actually kind of weird when you think about D'Amico Ryans as a linebacker, the type of linebackers he had in San Francisco, that it hasn't become more of a priority, but they are a defensive end and secondary built defense. That's where a lot of the resources have gone. I don't suspect they'll be using a high round pick on a linebacker or even a defensive tackle, which are the two spots where you just say, hey, just we got some guys there. Aziz Ashir played well this year. He's part of a great defense, so he got some acclaim. But as far as ranking the units, it's the defensive tackle spot and the off-ball linebacker spot are the two weakest units on that defense. The Texans just prioritize certain spots. Secondary and DN are those. Defensive tackle, they get by. And linebacker the same way.
It's like the two spots where they don't have, like, studs.
Yeah.
Like they don't have, like we're top of the league, like, level.
Yeah, where you're
like,
talking about all pro types or burgeoning stars with some of the younger players in the secondary. Although, at this point, the way Bullock and Lasseter have played their first couple seasons, you might just say they're stars right now. And then you have Stingley, of course, the all-pro. So, some news there. Small stuff from the Texans. Really just logistical things as far as the contract stuff. They get that done. I did reference the other Patriot news. If you don't know, it's not really a football story at all, other than you can have the conversation about how close should you be to a source. Like, if you remove the salacious stuff that is being reported in the New York Post about Dan Orsini and Mike Vrabel, if you've seen the pictures, well, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't, they were at a resort together or pictured together. The denials are from both sides is that they just happened to have been there and they met up because they're friends. That's the reporting or the response is, hey, that those pictures are taken out of context. So be it. But I guess the question would be is, should you be so familiar with a source in your business? Like Mike Vrabel's a coach who on occasion, I'm sure, says some things to reporters and because it furthers his own agenda or he wants to change the narrative. That's how it goes. Coaches do it. Agents do it. GMs do it. And that's the insider business. Should you be, forget about the hug. You want to hug someone, whatever. But hanging out in the hot tub at the pool, should that be how, like, insert any coach, any reporter, any personnel person, any agent, considering it's an information business and it's a business and a profession, how close should you be? Like John was on this morning, he said, hey, it could have just been an innocent thing. And that is a way to look at and go, you know what? Let's not assume that the worst thing that's happening because both individuals are married is happening. You don't have to assume that. But would we look a little weird at Adam Schefter if he was just hanging out in a hot tub with Vrabel? I think I actually would. I'd be like, What are you guys doing? Why are you hanging out? Aren't you guys? There's a business here that you conduct where Adam Schefter's in the information business, and Vrabel can use that mouthpiece to get out whatever he wants or not use them. Maybe he's a Rappaport guy, whatever it is. I think it is just a little. It'd be a little disconcerting to go, I mean, can I trust you to give me proper information in an unbiased way if you're that close to someone?
Yeah, like if they're like. If one of them's the best man at the other's wedding,
yeah,
that would be like, wait, what? Like this guy that's like reporting on, you know, a national NFL reporter, so he's going to report on Mike Vrabel and his team. Like, should they be that close? That
yeah.
Even if it is like just a, you know, again, like
they're really,
really
good
friends.
Can I trust what you're saying about your really good friend? I mean, even if you're the most upstanding person in the world. It does, as they say, conflict of interest. Can I trust that you will be unbiased?
Yeah.
Even if it's not like breaking news, if you're analyzing his coaching, can I trust you to be someone that will look at things from both sides and give me what you considered a well thought out analysis of what's going on in a game, of a decision he makes, when I can think back to early April and go, yeah, but you were in this Arizona resort's hot tub hanging out and having a conversation. How can I trust that anything you say about this person is real? And that goes across the board. There's the other aspect of are they friends? Or are they more? I can't speak to that. That is something for their significant others to really have an interest in. While that is interesting, it is not something I have real info on, so I can't really speak on it.
I'll let the New York Post
hang on. That's their job. if we're just keeping it in the realm of sports, going forward, even if it's as innocent as it is suggested to be, anytime I hear Diana Rossini and Mike Vrabel, I'm like, well, you're really good friends with Mike Vrabel. Anything you say about this guy, I mean, it's not what I'm going to trust. I'll wait for, insert Dan Graziano, to talk about it before I believe it, I guess. I could have used any Jordan Schultz, whatever the reporter in question should be.
I think that, I mean, because you do have, like, I mean, to take it to, like, an extreme of, like Chauncey Billups was the head coach of the Portland Trailblazers and is, whatever, got arrested by the feds for his connection. It's like, would I trust that, like, Shams Charania is giving the best information if Shams Charania and him are hanging out at Arizona resorts in the offseason? Or is it naturally just going to be like, hey, I'm going to slant it away from my friend Mike, like, committed some serious felonies? Like, that is just what's going to happen. Like, that is like, perfectly natural for anyone to do of, like, hey, this, you know, my friend's in trouble. I'm have to report on it. I'll let's hear his side at least. You know, like, it's just a natural impulse that you have that makes you, you know, makes the reporting work.
Yeah, people question the stories of reporters even when they don't have that background info. Like, oh, they're really good friends. Like, if a reporter writes a piece detailing the thoughts of a coach or a personnel man in advance of a big move that was made, and he puts it in, or after a big move is made, and they put it in a positive light. Well, you got access to this person and their thoughts. How unbiased could you possibly be if this person allowed you to get their inner thoughts on a particular move they made? You're not going to crush them because they gave you that access.
Yes.
It's all part of the access business. This is taking it to a different level because of the images that you see, despite the denials from both parties. So going forward, I don't think I'm gonna believe or trust anything involving Vrabel and Rossini, because I know at a minimum they're close.
Yeah, I'm gonna need to hear it from Rappaport.
Yeah,
right.
That's all. That is all.
Or until, like, the deal's final or whatever. Because most of Rossini does, or actually, she's actually different than Rappaport.
Like, she doesn't tweet contract.
Yeah.
Details about a deal that gets done or a trade. She's more
rumors
and what teams or guys or coaches or players are thinking about things. She works in that realm as opposed to being a newsbreaker. So, you know, it's a bit of access journalism where she's in with whoever and she has these conversations and then she can report what she hears. This one is probably a reason why it's difficult for women who work in sports to sometimes, unfortunately, be taken seriously, because if anything untowards appears, immediately everyone jumps to the worst possible conclusion. So you hear how professional you have to be. You have to even be less familiar than maybe your male counterpart, because there's always going to be assumption by the worst people in the world that you're up to something, and that's how you got the information you got. And this isn't going to help in that regard, because people do love to make an assumption. So that's out there, unfortunately, for both, particularly if none of this, at least the assumptions people are making, are real. It's tough to have someone just happen to snap a couple photos and change perception. I'm trying to fight against it.
Yeah,
as far as the romantic links, I just think now I know that they're close enough that any story she may put out there could be a bit slanted.
Yes, like, even like, we're almost definitely being more generous with the benefit of the doubt than
some others.
Each of their significant others probably are.
Unless they know that these two are close, maybe. That's very possible. We don't know anything about the inner workings.
Still, like, have a hard time thinking your wife would be like, yeah, that's cool. You guys look like you're having fun.
It's tough. It's a tough sell.
It's a tough sell.
Right or wrong, that's the assumption from the outside. And hopefully those assumptions are wrong, because you got two people that we don't really know on the other side having to deal with it themselves. I did see images of the What was the Coldplay concert? I forgot what business they were in, because it doesn't matter that much. But yeah, I did see a lot of people making the comp to the Coldplay concert, which is a story.
Not as bad as that.
No,
not as red-handed.
No. You didn't have someone.
They weren't swaying.
Yeah, I don't know.
They didn't have Chris Martin immediately diagnose it.
You didn't have the lead singer for one of the biggest bands in the world suggest that you were doing so. Oh, I guess they're having an affair. you didn't have that happen.
And the more I think about it, the more crazy it is that he was just like, affair?
Yeah, that's what it looks like to me. I mean, me and Gwen have had our time, but hey, never did this.
Should Chris Martin be the all-time, like, we have, like...
I think someone should send those pictures to Chris Martin.
Send him those pictures? Chris Martin, what do you think?
Give him context. Tell him about reporters can be friends and all the things, and have him make a decision.
Honestly, I don't think he needs the context. He didn't need the context that the he just saw.
When you got butt to groin hugging, yeah, it's very difficult to get to not assume
swaying to and clocks. Then when, and, yeah.
or fix you, and then when you see them dip out of frame, to not assume this
they didn't
one
play it off fair.
Yeah, but. This one they're just hanging out. So who knows, hug or whatever, hand holding, whatever you want to call that. Chris Martin should be our judge, jury, and not executioner.
No. I think he just like a consultant. You know, just. He weighs in with his like how we have like legal experts on SportsCenter every once in a while.
Yeah.
Like affair expert. Well,
alleged
probably,
affair.
He probably won't love that.
Yeah, I don't think he won. Yeah, I'm the lead singer of Coldplay, or you can know me as this.
I know a lot about affairs. No, not from personal experience.
He's a good judge of human behavior, is how we couch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Affair anthropologist.
This is what we're saying. He's a scientist now.
Infidelity anthropologist.
He is a scientist. Chris Martin, the scientist. We'll go to break. Jerry, you want to talk Rockets? Big win for them last night. Great comeback, down 21, wound up winning by 14. Rockets now have won 7 in a row. We'll talk to Jerry about them when we come back.
On ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Let's get to Jerry. Let's talk some Rockets. Rockets won their 7th in a row last night, late night. They go into the Valley of the Sun and get a win. Beat the Suns, beat their former teammate Dylan Brooks, beat Jalen Green. Jalen Green had one of his, what you would call, concert date nights. He really wanted to have a good night. He did not. We've seen that before when he was a Rocket. What's up, Jerry?
Good morning, guys. Hey, I'm not going to complain. I mean, the win is a win. But last night, I don't understand like what the mindset of an NBA coach to motivate their players. It got ugly the very first quarter. It was 23-5. I was so confused. It was nasty offensive play from us. And then the Suns were just getting back-to-back and ones. It's just like, I don't know what Ime has to do to motivate them to come out better. They came out slow at Golden State. They won that game as well. But I feel like when basketball playoff starts, you know, that 94 feet is going to shrink, and it's going to be tighter for you to just to play lazy, you know, lazy in the first quarter. And my second thing is that my wife is asking me at 10:45 p.m. why is the game barely in the second quarter? This game's late start was ridiculous. It says 10 o'clock start. It didn't tip off to like 10:10. What is up with Houston game, these 9 p.m. games and having them home, especially like U of H? Games at 9 p.m., 10 p.m., what are we doing? And in Phoenix, you would think, hey, okay, you know, it's 8 o'clock, it's 9 o'clock start. No, it's 8 o'clock over there. I was so confused on the time change. 10 o'clock start in Houston is ridiculous. Thank you.
Yeah, it's tough. Part of an NBC doubleheader. Yeah, it's Celtics, Hornets in the first game. It's just a product of TV, and you want to give your TV partner not only the time to have the other game air in its entirety, but inventory and how do you do it? There are going to be times where a central time zone team is going to wind up playing on the West Coast, and fortunately, the Rockets are in a spot where there's some interest in watching them play, not just locally, but nationally. So they're a team that they're going to get put on TV nationally. And unfortunately, because of that, you get what you got last night. I talked about it. Sean talked about when he confirmed it to Brian, who works here. Brian and Joe are like, does that say what I think it says?
11 Eastern?
Yeah, that is what's going to happen sometimes. You play a West Coast team with your Central Time Zone team, and both teams are teams that people want to watch. You get this type of outcome, unfortunately. So yeah, it was a late night. To your point about the court shrinking, that was part of something I noticed, that the Suns were very frenetic in how they wanted to play. And one thing you should not do when you're the Suns is try to out-athlete the Rockets. You don't want to get into a game where their athletic ability is playing a major part in how things are proceeding. And the Suns, maybe it's the lack of a point guard to slow things down. And once you get up big, because you're shooting the ball well, you think, hey, this is pretty easy. We can continue to play this way. At some point, your shooting will cool off, and their athletes will remain their athletes, and you just can't match up. There are just times where the Rockets got to so many loose balls or rebounds that the Suns were incapable of getting to. When you're running Gillespie out there, and of course, unfortunately, this is going to sound like a white thing. This is not what I mean, because if they had Cooper Flagg out there, it'd be a little different. But they were running Gillespie out there and Grayson Allen, who has a lot of miles on him and actually looks older than he actually is.
Yeah, the gray hair.
The gray hair makes him look older than he is.
He
was a freshman on that Justice Winslow. Who else was on that team that won the title? When they all had the same haircut.
Except for Grayson Allen.
Except for Grayson, honestly. Who else? It was him. It was Winslow.
Jahlil Okafor. Quinn Cook.
He was with those guys. Looks like he played with the Jay Williams team.
Yeah, Grayson Allen's 30.
Yeah, he's not that old. But he was pretty athletic in college. He's just not going to be at the level of Amen and Tari and all the other, and Jabari Smith.
He was a freshman in college the same year I was a freshman in college.
Yeah, and your long locks make you look far younger than him. And you don't have the gray hair that he has.
Come on, Grayson Allen, step it up.
Look, man, that NBA life got to him, man.
It is stressful. Having to be...
He's been traded around quite a bit,
yeah,
right?
And having to be a shooter for five different...
Your job is, if you don't make shots, you're not doing your job. That's tough. He's played for the Jazz, the Grizzlies, the Bucks, and the Suns. So he's on his fourth team.
Oh, okay.
He's been there.
Less traveled than I thought.
But yeah,
I thought there's a Orlando stint in there or something. Yeah.
I mean, we'll get there. He's only 30.
Yeah.
I know you think he's 36, but he's only 30.
He'll
wind up playing for like eight teams. That'll be his NBA life.
One-year minimums for a couple of years.
Well, yeah, that'll certainly be the case.
I think that. You especially saw when the Rockets made the run in the fourth quarter to, like, turn it from Rockets, you know, come back and gut out a win to, like, oh, this actually won't be competitive for the fourth quarter. Is like, they just, there's probably four straight possessions where there's a live ball, either turnover or long rebound, and just, like, immediate dunk, or, you know, you get a cross match and you get Grayson Allen on Alperen Şengün and immediate
close.
Points.
It's not even close. So, yeah, it will shrink. The game will get slower, and we will find out if they do start slow and the other team jumps out to a big lead in the playoffs, will their half-court offense be enough, or where they're, and combined with their athleticism and offensive rebounding, be enough? If it's the Lakers, I don't foresee a lot of 20-point deficits, but even if it happens – the Lakers don't have enough firepower over the course of a game to hold the Rockets off, that matchup being the most likely.
Are the Lakers as constituted? Are they that much? Are they better than the Suns? I was going to say, are they that much better? Or are they better?
The Lakers with LeBron, because you didn't see him last night. No, I don't think they're better than the Suns.
Yeah, and then if you get out to a 26-5, or you're a 5, you're the 5, and the other team has 26. If that happens against the Thunder, you lost.
Yeah.
Just boom. Just like, it actually makes it more like cut and dry of, like, you know, you don't want to do it, but you might be able to get away with it in a playoff game against the Lakers getting off to that bad start, which also, like, the Rockets aren't a bad start team.
No, that just
really
happened.
Yeah.
It happened a couple times. He laid it out, but for the most part, they're not a team who we are far more concerned about how they fall apart in fourth quarters as opposed to how they start in first. So it has happened a lot the last couple of times. Hopefully it doesn't happen. And it was to the extreme last night. The Suns team had a lot of energy. Kevin Durant talked about it. They hadn't been playing well recently. They wanted to really come out and play. And they jumped out to a lead, and the Rockets, because they're better, found a way to come back. And by the time the fourth quarter came around, they ran away with that one. So I get your concerns. You're staying up late and you're watching your team. It's 10:15 when the game starts, and by 10:25 your team's down by 20. That's tough.
That adds to the like, what the
hell am I up for? What am I doing? What are they doing? But they found a way. We'll hear from Eric when we come back. Eric, does that trade still look good for the Suns? Maybe you'll have a different opinion when we hear from you when we get back.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, it's the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
All right, we'll get to Eric here, and then we'll do a little college football. We don't do much of it in April. We do have spring games approaching. Of course, it's time for some list. So CBS Sports has a list of the best Power 5 quarterbacks, or as it stands now, you wouldn't even call it a Power 5, would you?
Power 4?
Yeah, I mean, the Pac-12 is trying to come back, but there won't be considered a Power 5 conference. So it's a Power 4, and it will lead to a sound bite we'll play from an Oregon quarterback coach, which I find absolutely ridiculous. But the quarterback he coaches makes this list, and is very high on the list, so we'll talk about that. But first, let's get to Eric. What's up, Eric?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I won't be satisfied with that trade unless the Rockets win the championship this year with KD and his five burner phones. And that's the only way I would like to trade. If they don't win the championship, it's off or not. Also, I heard rumblings that Joe Espada is in the hot seat or on the hot seat. Is there any truth to that? And one more thing. I think the Raiders are leaning more towards Diego Pavia than Mendoza, because I guess Mendoza didn't show up for the workouts. I'll hang up the listen.
Well,
thanks, guys.
Thank you for the call. They're not leaning towards Diego Pavia. Diego Pavia had a viral moment with John Gruden as part of Gruden's quarterback class, but that's not going to sway the Raiders to draft the 5'9" and 3" whatever quarterback. Unlikely for that to happen. As far as the rumors you're hearing about Joe Espada, is the hot seat in reference to the fact that he's on the final year of his deal? Is that where you're hearing the rumblings from? Because everyone who pays attention to the Astros knows Espada and Dana Brown are both on the final year of their deal. Dana Brown says, hey, I don't really think about contracts. It'll just work out. I'll do my job and it'll work out. We'll see. At 6-6, we'll see. We'll see if it goes his way with the long season remaining. But yeah, those guys, I don't know if it will be Espada's fault if the pitching just doesn't perform. Those guys need to win. People believe those guys need to have, at least the team has to have a good year to secure those two individuals' long-term future of the Astros. I think Espada's kind of handcuffed by his roster, particularly how the staff has performed so far. And then you got Hunter Brown going to miss at least several weeks. So I don't believe the Astros are making a move in the regular season unless it gets to a point where the clubhouse is talking about how he's lost them. But yeah, they got to win. Whether Jim Crane believes they should be a championship contender or not, if he does a proper assessment of the roster, I think this team contending for a playoff spot is the minimum he would require. So that's got to happen, and we won't know that, hopefully, for a long while. I don't want to know that they're out of the race quickly. So
yeah,
that'll be determined in the future. And yeah, if you think that the Kevin Durant stuff won't be justified until a title, okay, that's reasonable. Kevin Durant was brought here to help them win a title, but you were firmly in the camp of this is a bad trade. And I don't think that could have been determined as early as you determined it, simply because of a burner account or a slow couple months as far as wins and losses were concerned.
I mean, he was on it like at very, the start of the season.
Yeah, it was very early.
It was like before. They're playing well.
Yeah, so he wants it both ways. He will always be right unless they win a title.
Yes. This year.
Yes.
If they win it next year, it doesn't.
Well, we'll see. I don't know. Did he clarify?
No, he said if they win a title this year.
Okay. He needs it to happen this year. Okay. Sure.
Because he wants to leave no room for him to be wrong.
And he feels pretty good about them not winning a title this year. So yeah. I get it. You want to win this one.
I did the same exact thing with Jake Myers winning World Series MVP.
Yeah, but at least there is a tongue-in-cheek thing here. Maybe it is with him. It is Eric. But as I've stated before, I don't agree with your stance there. But
it was not a good, like you said, not a great showcase last night for the
sun side of it.
The young piece that they gave up.
Yeah. Green, Brooks, and then the 10th overall pick who did not play, right?
I don't remember seeing Malwatch out there.
Yeah, so none of the things that the Suns acquired.
He played 1 minute.
Oh, well, okay. Was that at the end of the game?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah. So far, so good on the Rockets side. We'll see how the playoffs turn out. Okay, let's get to these quarterback rankings. But first, let's play this clip. If you don't know who the Oregon quarterback coach's name is, welcome to the party. I didn't know who it was until I saw this. It became a bit of a discussion this morning because I was vehemently on the side of this is dumb. Just because a coach said it doesn't mean it means a damn thing. People like to deify coaches no matter what they say. We gotta take it like, well, he does know football, so what he says makes sense. We'll play this. Sean, you determine if you think it makes sense. Here is, I want to hopefully get the guy's name right, Koa Kai. It's K-A-Pashri-A-I. That's his last name. He is the quarterback coach for the Oregon Ducks. Here's his thoughts on ice cream and the decisions around ice cream and how it makes him think about a player.
Like, I ask him a question like this all the time. Hey, do you like chocolate ice cream or vanilla ice cream? Okay, the minute a kid pauses, I don't really want that kid. Right, because you need to have some type of conviction, right, wrong, or indifferent. Okay? So whether you like chocolate or you like vanilla, I don't really care. But if you sit there and say, coach, I don't know. I want, is it melted? Is it not? What's the brand? So on and so forth. Like, what is this kid going to do on third down in front of 110,000? He's probably going to think about it more than he should. He's not going to have conviction, right? So it's, like I just said, long-winded, I understand. But it's the mental aspect is really what we're after.
Who wants melted ice cream?
Okay, I thought it was a little like, a little ridiculous. If you're asking follow-up questions, I actually don't trust you third down in the big house. Like, if you're going, like, melted, what brand?
Yeah,
just answer the damn question.
Oh, so you're on their side.
Like, with the examples he gave, I'm kind of like...
No, he's a quarterback coach. If your quarterback asks if it's melted or not, yeah, maybe don't recruit a kid who asks if the ice cream is melted.
Yeah.
Who thinks about having melted ice cream?
Why would that?
Be your first choice? But I do push back on not having a bit of a hesitation when you're thinking about things, because that's what he's talking about. You need to be decisive in the big house. How decisive was Dante Moore when he threw that opening play pick six?
Very decisive.
Yeah. So perhaps you have your quarterback think a little bit more. Hey, Pons is sitting on this. Maybe I go backside. Maybe I look, decipher, which you could say is thinking, hesitate, if you want to call it that, go backside and find the wide open receiver on the corner because Indiana has their coverage rolled to the side you throw the football to. I just find it interesting, considering the play that ended their season, even though they had, like, I don't know, 59 minutes ago.
Literally the first play.
Yeah, it's still in. Their season was done at that point.
Yeah, it was.
It was done at that point.
I'm not disagreeing. Yeah. It was just the first play.
Your quarterback was the most decisive he'd probably been all year long. There was a lot of, like, they played against Tech the game before. But, you know, you got to get in a lot of practice time. You're ready to go for your game. It's the opening possession. This is your script. This is the play you want to run on the first play from scrimmage. He was very decisive when he threw that pick six. So, perhaps ask your players to take a little bit more time before making the decision. I don't know. The attendance. What about 75,000 plus in the Peach Bowl? What if the quarterback is decisive then?
It was mostly Indiana fans.
True. But less than,
like,
the big house.
50,000.
But less than the big house.
Yeah.
That he's asking for his player to be decisive in.
Yeah. No, I think that if you ponder the question for, I don't know, I'll give you like 3-5 seconds to, like, Because it is chocolate or
you
vanilla.
You could always say neither, too.
Yeah, you can say neither.
I don't want
that. That's fine. If you are saying, like, what brand? Melt
I don't,
it.
I don't think there's any correlation,
get
honestly.
Get out of here. We're Oregon. We can find a better quarterback.
I don't think that's why you have Dylan Raiola, I guess.
Yeah, we can find a backup.
So you'd like him to be – so Dylan Raiola probably answered the question specifically, quickly, vanilla or chocolate. When you ask them, do you think it's a good idea to cosplay another quarterback for the entirety of your college career? I'm sure he was very decisive in saying yes, because that's what he's done.
Do you plan on stopping?
Why would I? Look what it's done for me so far.
No. I like that he was decisive.
Look, I don't like the choice, but at least he was decisive, which I guess he would say about the Dante Moore interception.
Yeah.
I don't like that choice he made, but he did it with conviction and ended our season. And Dante Moore, the aforementioned Dante Moore, is the number one quarterback in the Power Four, according to CBS Sports. He's followed by Julian Sain, so there's some Big Ten there, dominance.
Big Ten bias.
Arch Manning, the first non-Big Ten quarterback at number three. SEC again in Trinidad Chambliss, and then Darian Mensa is the top-ranked quarterback in the ACC. He moved from Duke to Miami, and then you get to CJ Carr, Notre Dame, Gunnar Stockton at Georgia, and so on and so forth. So if you look at that list, everyone actually saying was a transfer. No one but Arch Manning. Everyone but Arch Manning started their career someplace else in that top five.
Yeah.
Then you get Carr, who's a Notre Dame guy.
Oh, yeah, and he's been Notre Dame the whole
time. Yeah, then Stockton as well. But in that top five, all the guys except for Arch was a transfer.
That's a pretty good top six.
When we're talking about the draft and what could be in 2027, you start reading off some of the names and what they've accomplished so far in their careers. This is why people are saying the 2027 draft could be a good one, but of course we got to let the season play out and see how these guys respond.
And even just as college players, that way I can rope in Gunnar Stockton.
Yeah.
Where it's like Gunnar Stockton's a good college quarterback.
Yes.
Yeah, like, there's going to be some high level.
And CJ Carr is draft eligible, right? Was he a true freshman? He was a redshirt freshman.
He was a redshirt freshman.
So he'll be draft eligible if he chooses to come out.
Yeah, that's why I think it is safe to say, like, even though I am one of the more like, oh yeah, next year's draft is definitely better. Yeah, if you like this draft, wait until you see next year's draft. It's like every year, like clockwork, the quarterback class is better next year than this year. This year, I am actually like, yeah, this. You only need like three of these guys to hit, and they're all draft eligible. Like everyone in the top six is draft eligible. It's like, well, okay, top five. I won't include Gunnar Stockton in this. Sorry, Gunnar Stockton. But
that's tough for Stockton.
You only need half of them to have good, you know, build on last year type seasons. And like, oh yeah, now you have three first round picks at quarterback. Where this year we're having to, you know, manufacture a Ty Simpson argument.
It's one guy doing that.
Well, you know.
Yeah. If you look at
collectively,
if you looked at the guys we mentioned, there's certainly a number of guys who have put I don't know if you want to say good take, because I'm not a tape guy, but have put out enough production that you go, at least if these guys turn out to not be great, or we have guys talking about the draft class isn't a good one at the quarterback position, it would be a surprise that you can't find an option here, at least three or four for quarterback-hungry teams.
And you're going to get, I mean, barring injury, I guess, you're going to get, like, pretty good because, you have – I mean, you have a bunch of guys that are in the playoff last year, and then you have Arch Manning at Texas and CJ Carr at Notre Dame who are – you know,
as long as it's
a 16-team playoff, they're probably both in. Like,
well, as long as Notre Dame finishes in the top 12, they're definitely in.
Yeah,
this year.
So you're going to get a lot of not just another look at them, but you're going to get a lot of matchups. You know, where Oregon's going to play a Big Ten schedule, Ohio State's going to play a Big Ten schedule. Like you're going to get a lot of. I mean, Ohio State and Texas play each other in week two.
Yeah.
Like you're just going to get a lot of. Like, there's not going to be a Ty Simpson, we don't really know. Like, you're going to know because all these guys are returning starters and are playing, you know, top-level competition.
Yeah, Darian Mensa may be the one guy you start to look at Miami's schedule. They do go to Notre Dame later in the year. They do play Clemson. We'll see how good Clemson is this year.
But if they walk through that schedule like they should,
yeah, with the weapons,
they'll play in the playoff.
Yeah, so you'll get an opportunity to see him. And when I said Notre Dame makes it if they make top 12, of course, the number of teams to make a playoff is 12, but Notre Dame has a special, was it dispensation,
yes,
with the new rule, or it's not a new rule, but it'll come into effect this year, that let's say you have your non-Power 4 team who makes it. Let's say Notre Dame was ranked 10th or 11th, let's say 11th, and the non-Power 5 team is in. If Notre Dame would make it above the number 10 team, just as an example, mm-hmm, because they have to be in no matter what if they're in the top 12. So if there would be the first team out because a non-Power 4 team has to be in, Notre Dame would jump over a team that the committee...
That large, yeah.
That the large that would make it if not for the rule.
Yeah.
So for example, this past year, yeah, Miami's out, Notre Dame's in because of the rule that's in place. Somehow Notre Dame got that rule in place because they are Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And it didn't come to the forefront until it became a real debate, Miami-Notre Dame.
I only remember hearing about it the last, like, reveal show, yeah, like, before the reveal show that is the playoff.
Yeah, Ross Dellinger, I think, reported on it initially when it was a thing maybe a couple years ago, and then he, yeah, brought it back. He goes, hey, this was a thing, but it wasn't something to be considered. Because we hear news all the time that passes by the, yeah, wayside. Because
it was like in May or something.
Yeah, and then you find out that going forward, as long as they're a 12-team playoff, Notre Dame is in no matter what. Some other teams a hard luck case, even if they finish, yeah, ahead of Notre Dame in the final rankings.
Yeah, so, you know, in theory, like, I don't know, Oklahoma could be the 11th, be ranked 11th, Notre Dame be ranked 12th, and because there's, you know, two teams that are outside the top 12, but they win their conference, so they have to be in. Well, Notre Dame just takes Oklahoma's at-large spot, essentially.
Yeah. As we said, it would have been the case this year with two teams getting in,
yeah,
to the playoff.
And they would have taken Miami's spot, who
made the playoff,
who
and almost won the national title and beat them.
Notre Dame.
And beat them, yeah. It would have been an absolute disaster for the college football playoff. They avoided it by 1 year. We'll see what happens this year.
Like, wouldn't have been a disaster for us.
I mean, we probably would have beaten Notre Dame. Yeah, A&M probably doesn't, but considering how Marcel replayed in the wind. All right, we'll go to break with that. We got one more segment to go. We'll wrap it up. We'll play some sound from a fight that I did not predict. I thought there might be a fight in the Brewers-Red Sox game, considering what Wilson Contreras was on after the game on Monday night. Well, we got a fight in Anaheim between the Angels and the Braves. We'll play that sound when we come back.
Listen to ESPN 97.5 and HD 97.9 HD2.
It's the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
So while the Rockets, or at least NBC, was forcing the Rockets fans to watch a late-night game in Phoenix, there was some nonsense going on in Anaheim. Jose Soler, Jorge Soler, hit a home run early in the Angels-Braves game. The Braves went on to win that game. It wasn't a very compelling game until a fight broke out. So the circumstance is this. Soler hits a home run early. He gets hit by a pitch, I believe, in his next at bat. And then he has a ball thrown behind him in his last at bat. I say his last at bat because this happened.
Lopez fires into the backstop. It's right back to Heim, who throws late to second base. Now here comes Soler going after Lopez. They square up, and Soler and Lopez are throwing haymakers. They're going after each other. Soler is finally tackled from behind as the Angels and Braves are all out onto the field. That came up out of nowhere. Soler was upset after a couple of pitches were high and in after he hit yet another homer off Lopez, and a fight broke out just out of thin air.
So I said it was behind him. It was high and in, but not behind him, the pitch that set it off. Soler, not hit as much by the Braves as Wilson Contreras has been hit by the Brewers, but he has seen enough. Lopez kept the baseball in his hand, and whether you want to use that as baseball's version of brass knuckles in a fight, I'm with it. Now, I can't be with you chucking a baseball at him in close proximity, but if you want to use it as a weapon to bludgeon, wow, it's not something people would endorse.
Feels innovative.
I can't really be against you in a fight. You're doing whatever you can to survive. And you hear the announcer say Soler was tackled from behind. He wasn't. He was tackled from the front by the Braves manager, Walt Weiss. Form tackle by Walt Weiss.
Okay. Walt Weiss. What? You don't ever really see a manager or coach. Well, you did one time and Pedro Martinez
shoved. Get out of here, Zimmer.
But you don't really see the coaches get as, like, not just involved, but, like, in the middle, in the eye of the storm of the fracas. Like, he had to, I mean, you know, you got to get out there pretty quick to be the one who tackles Jorge Soler.
So Jorge Soler, Reynaldo Lopez were the two main combatants. You mentioned you having to get out there quickly. I tracked the umpire because he noticed even before the catcher that something was going down. He was shadowing Soler up until a point where he knew an actual fight was going to happen. Then he stepped out of the way. He was like, he didn't try to stop the fight. He was like, I don't know if he said anything. Hey, Jorge, don't do it. Don't do it. Yeah. So he tracks him. He's shadowing him. And then he goes, oh, this is
going to
be
he kind of like does like the little trot out
this
with
this is going to be a thing.
And then just kind
of. Once he doesn't get in front of him, he goes, you know what? I'm out of here. Let these guys handle. Let Walt Weiss break this up.
Yeah. No, I mean, also. For the Braves, no way to treat World Series hero Jorge Soler.
Honestly. I mean, show some respect.
What are we doing, guys?
What are we doing?
But yeah, I mean, we talked about Wilson Contreras, and I think I even said, like, when's the last time we had, like, a proper mound visit from a batter?
You.
We got
your,
one.
From your mouth to God's ears.
To Jorge Soler's
ears. Or at least Jorge Soler's ears. Wilson Contreras did stare down a Brewers pitcher last night after strike. He got struck out. The pitcher celebrated in a way that Contreras didn't like. And he looked at him like, what are you up to? But nothing happened. But we did get our fight in Braves versus Angels. The Braves went on to win that one. And as you said, former hero for the
Iconic
Braves.
Iconic home run.
Yeah. And yet, didn't keep them from fighting each other 5 years later. All right, we're done. Rich Eisen's up next. Oh, I forgot. Tell the people, was he as insufferable as you thought he might have been after a while?
He
the
got
Michigan
it,
title?
The first 40-ish minutes, he got it out of his system.
Okay.
It was mostly okay.
Did Dusty May show up in the first 40?
Yeah, Dusty May. He was the interview in the second.
Okay, cool. So, Rich Eisen, professional.
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah. We'll see if he's at a pool with someone at some point.
With Dusty May, maybe.
Maybe, yeah. We know they would be good buddies. All right, we're done. Rich Eisen's up next, followed by Jeremy and Joe. We'll talk to you tomorrow. There goes-